during Gaza City. And Jordanians gather outside the Israeli embassy in the capital Amman for the third consecutive night, calling on their government to cancel all treaties with Israel. Hello and welcome, everybody. We start the bulletin with Gaza, where the Israeli regime keeps pressing on with its genocidal campaign for nearly 6 months. Over the past 24 hours, 62 more Palestinians are killed in airstrikes on the besieged strip. Fresh Israeli bombardments targeted several areas, including the central city of Deir al-Balah and Gaza City. Warplanes once again hit the vicinity of Al-Shifa Hospital, which was besieged by occupation forces about 2 weeks ago. According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, the regime's troopers have shot and killed some 13 children in and around the hospital in 1 week. The group says many Palestinians were also killed while trying to flee the medical complex. Meanwhile, the southern city of Rafah, which is hosting 1.5 million people, remains under the threat of a ground invasion. Israeli onslaught on Gaza continues despite worsening humanitarian situation there. Since the onset of the war, more than 32,550 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, mostly women and children. On this segment of the program, the Israeli regime is facing condemnations after new footage emerged showing its forces fatally shooting unarmed Palestinian men on the Gaza beach and burying them by bulldozer. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has denounced Israel and called on the UN and international courts to hold the regime accountable for the crimes being committed in Gaza. It said the footage is, quote, further evidence of the scale of fascism and criminality that governs Zionist behaviors. America's largest Muslim civil liberties and advocacy organization has also deplored the killings. The Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, has demanded an international investigation into what it called the heinous war crime. The footage captured by long-distance camera shows the men walking along the beach waving a white cloth in a sign of surrender before Israeli troops shoot them dead. The regime soldiers then bury the victims with a bulldozer. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have political analyst Ali Rizk, who's joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Also, we have podcaster and journalist Esha Krishnaswamy joining us from St. Petersburg. Welcome to the program. To the both of you, let's start off with Mr. Rizk. I want to get your perspective on this recent video, which is just depicting one of many war crimes and crimes against humanity the Israelis have committed during this genocide. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says that this video is further evidence of the scale of fascism and criminality that governs the Zionist behaviors. Break that down for us, please.
Well, I think that the Israeli approach from the outset was very clear, the dehumanization of the Palestinians. If you recall, at the beginning of the Israeli military operations, the Israeli Defense Minister, Yoav Gallant, referred to the inhabitants of Gaza as being quote-unquote human animals. And I think that the Israeli behavior and the Israeli military operations that have taken place in Gaza do reflect that particular mindset, the dehumanization of the Palestinians. And I think that this dehumanization element has been especially felt with this current government, which is described as the most right-wing in Israel's history. You have figures like Smotrich, and you have Ben-Gafir and others who have taken the animosity or the hostility to the Palestinians towards a new level or to a new level. This, as I said, is being reflected by the Israeli military action on the ground. But in the end, this all backfires against Israel. When people see these images, I think that that just only harms Israel further. Even the former American President Donald Trump mentioned in a recent interview that Israel was losing the public relations war, if you would like. So it has a lot of negative repercussions for Israel.
Ms. Krishnaswamy, do you agree with our guest, Mr. Rizk, about the damaging effect that all of this is having on the Israeli regime? And also, if you may, the impunity that the Israelis have been enjoying, it's basically pushing even the Israelis' limits as to how grotesque their crimes can be.
Yeah, it is damaging Israeli perception on Israel around the world, but unfortunately, it might not have an effect on ending the impunity just because of the way the UN Security Council is designed. And we all know there is one country that will always veto any resolutions against Israel, the USA. And on Monday, for example, the U.S. abstained on a resolution for ceasefire, while they also, the State Department spokesperson John Kirby also reiterated that their policy of sending weapons will not change. And there's also evidence that the U.S. wants to have a demilitarized Gaza, i.e. one without any resistance. So combined with this, it's hard to see how their impunity will end if they keep getting unlimited supply of weapons and support from the U.S.
That's it for this edition of our program. Thanks to political analyst Ali Riz joining us from Beirut, and thanks to podcaster and journalist Esha Krishnaswamy joining us from St. Petersburg. And that's a wrap for this edition of the News Review. The Israeli military has confirmed the killing of one more soldier during an encounter with Palestinian resistance fighters on the ground in the Gaza Strip. The military says another trooper was also injured in southern Gaza. Elsewhere, the Palestinian resistance fighters targeted invading forces with mortar shells in central Gaza. The latest fatality brings to 254 the number of soldiers the regime has confirmed dead since launching the ground invasion of Gaza in November. Independent media outlets and Palestinians say the fatalities among the regime's troops are much higher, and that Tel Aviv is hiding the real number to avoid public anger against the far-right ruling coalition. UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Occupied Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, who presented a report on the Israeli genocide in Gaza, reveals that she was threatened throughout her mandate.
It's been a difficult time. I've been attacked since the very beginning of my mandate. I don't say that it's been a pleasant journey, but I can tell you it's much more. I mean, most of the pain comes from where I have to observe and monitor and investigate day by day. Yeah, I do receive threats. Nothing that so far I have considered needing extra precautions. Pressure, yes, and it doesn't change either my commitment or the results of my work, I think. I say today that Israel cannot behave as it does as an apartheid state and face no consequences. And the second thing is that there is amnesia that the state of Israel, around the birth of the state of Israel, because it was the outcome not just of one tragedy, but it's connected to two tragedies. And one is very well known and absorbed, which is the tragedy, the horror of the Holocaust. The other, what it meant for the native people of Palestine, the creation of the State of Israel, dispossession, forced displacement, and this is history.
At least three Israelis have been injured, one of them critically, during a retaliatory operation carried out by Palestinians in the occupied territories. The shooting operation by masked men occurred on a road near Ariha, a city in the Jordan Valley. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, for more details.
According to the Israeli military, a masked man arrived at the 90 route, that is in the Jordan Valley, near the Palestinian village of Al-Auja, and opened fire at vehicles there, including a bus. Immediately, the man who opened fire succeeded to flee. A manhunt is taking a place in that area. All the entrances to the Jordan Valley, as well as to the city of Ariha, where the operation or the shooting had taken place close to the city of Ariha has been closed. Palestinians are not allowed to enter the city of Ariha or the Jordan Valley, and the manhunt is still taking place. The Israelis claim that this operation had been carried out by a Palestinian. It's a retaliatory operation and shooting, and the manhunt is still taking place. We have to mention that even without any Israeli, even without any anti-Israeli operations or Palestinian shootings here and there, the Israeli military continues to suffocate Palestinians with numerous Israeli military checkpoints. Every city have checkpoints. If not checkpoints, there are earth mounds as well as metal gates in order to control the Palestinians' movement and to make daily life of Palestinians intolerable.
Jordanians have hit the streets of the capital Amman for the third consecutive night in support of Palestinians while demanding an end to ties with the Israeli regime. The protesters gathered near the Israeli embassy and condemned the ongoing genocide in Gaza. They chanted slogans, carried placards, and waved Palestinian flags. For months, Jordanians have been calling on their government to cancel all treaties with Israel, shut down the regime's embassy, and stop Jordan from being a transit for goods into Israel. Jordan, which hosts 2.4 million Palestinian refugees, has witnessed a number of rallies since Israel launched its war on Gaza. Meanwhile, Moroccans also staged pro-Palestine rallies and asked their government to end its normalization deal with Tel Aviv. Anti-Israeli sentiment remains high across the region as the regime presses on with its genocidal campaign in Gaza, despite a UN Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire. The Islamic Republic of Iran has distributed a large amount of humanitarian aid among Palestinian refugees in Syria in the holy month of Ramadan as part of its unwavering support for the Palestinian cause. Ibrahim Wahdi reports from Damascus.
In the holy month of Ramadan, and as part of its commitment to Al-Quds International Day, the Islamic Republic of Iran, via its embassy in Damascus, has distributed several tons of humanitarian aid among Palestinian refugees and resistance factions in Syria. The convoy included essential food kits as a gift from the Iranian nation.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and the Axis of Resistance stand by the oppressed Palestinian people in the face of the Western and American support for the Israeli entity, which has not ceased its crimes against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Today's gathering comes within the framework of supporting the resilient and patient Palestinian people.
This gift is part of a series of annual donations offered by the Islamic Republic of Iran to Palestinian refugees during the month of Ramadan in several Syrian cities. According to Palestinian officials, this large amount of aid delivered by Iran is a message of solidarity with and commitment to the Palestinian cause.
This is a significant step within the framework of Iran's support for the resistance of the Palestinian people. This support has been reflected in all forms and means since the victory of the Islamic Revolution under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, may God rest his soul, and whose legacy continued with the leader Imam Ali Khamenei. Therefore, we as Palestinian people and resistance factions appreciate this gift and everything that the Islamic Republic is providing.
The Palestinian factions expressed their gratitude to the Islamic Republic of Iran for this gift that is presented every year to the Palestinian people.
This aid provided by the Islamic Republic of Iran during the month of Ramadan to the Palestinian people is considered as proof of Iran's great role and the interdependence between the Iranian and Palestinian people. These activities confirm the loyalty of the Palestinian people to the Axis of Resistance, in addition to the fundamental and strategic role of Syria and Iran in the Axis of Resistance.
With this humanitarian aid, Iran demonstrates that true support lies in actions rather than words, and it reflects the enduring place of the Palestinian cause in every Iranian's heart.
This gift is not only a gesture of love from the Iranian leadership and people. More importantly, it underscores their unwavering commitment to help their Palestinian brethren wherever they are. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with government officials on the occasion of the month of Ramadan. It is many years now that we have been issuing this warning, and officials have made good efforts within the remit of their capabilities. But we should pursue the economy of resistance inside the country with all our power and by using all the capacities of the economy of resistance. This is social piety on the issue of the economy. Of course, this model is not particular to us. Some other countries have also formulated and selected the model of the economy of resistance for themselves, and they have witnessed the results. The focal point in the economy of resistance is on the internal alongside the external. An internal focus should not be interpreted as isolation. We should focus on the inside as well as taking a look at the outside. But we should rely on our domestic capabilities and capacities. I would like to speak a little about this matter. Of course, I have said many things in this regard before. The policies on the economy of resistance, which have been prepared and announced, were not formulated all of a sudden. They are not an impulsive matter or based on personal viewpoints. They are the product of a collective mind and long consultations.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
After the policies on the economy of resistance were prepared with these qualities and promoted in the media, and after our friends and colleagues in the Honorable Administration adopted some measures in this regard, they were approved by many economic experts. They placed great emphasis on it, and thus the phrase "the economy of resistance" entered the current economic culture of the country and found a place in the economic discourse of the country. This shows the correctness and strength of this path. The economy of resistance is contrary to the old model, which was dictated by powers for the so-called developing or third world countries. They dictated a certain model. I do not want to expand on this model, which says that if third world countries want to achieve economic growth and prosperity, and if they want to reach the level of global economy, they should follow this model whose main reliance is on the outside, with all this implies.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and welcome. And this week, we are discussing the ongoing South Africa's genocide case against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice, ICJ. Now, the case has drawn the admiration of all freedom seekers worldwide. We have a special guest to discuss the topic today. He's none other than South African Ambassador to Iran, His Excellency Dr. Francis Moloi. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador, for your time today.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Mubarak. It's a pleasure to be here.
As we know, many freedom seekers worldwide and people who love peace, they have welcomed South Africa's case against the Israeli apartheid regime at the ICC over its genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza. Now, first, can you tell us what was the motivation or the factors behind South Africa's move to initiate this very historical case?
Well, the people of Palestine have been under occupation for over 75 years. And they have not enjoyed the rights and freedoms that we as the world community have proclaimed on, particularly after the Second World War.
Yeah.
They have been on the receiving end of Israeli brutality, Israeli violence, violation of human rights and freedoms, denial of rights. And that situation of the Nakba has been continuing since 1948.
Yeah.
But what we saw since October last year is unprecedented in recent memory.
Yeah.
And when we looked at the totality of what the apartheid government in Israel has done, for us it is a very clear, straightforward, open and shut textbook case of genocide. Because what has happened in Gaza flows directly from the genocidal instructions, genocidal statements that were uttered by the top state functionaries in Israel. And those instructions and statements were carried to the letter by the IDF. And when we look at everything that has happened, every single one of those violations that have been committed fit very neatly the provisions of Article 2 of the Genocide Convention. It is clear that these actions by the Israeli Defense Force are aimed at killing the members of the group, which are the Palestinians, to cause them immense bodily and mental harm. Everything has been done to ensure the total destruction of Palestinian lives. Everything has been done to prevent the births in the Palestinian community. And if you look at that for us, that is a textbook definition of what a genocide is. But why did we decide to go to the ICJ and not any other court? Because, first of all, the ICJ is the only tribunal in the system of international law that has jurisdiction to decide disputes over genocide. South Africa, as a signatory to the Genocide Convention, like Israel and all other countries, we all have an obligation, a binding obligation under the Genocide Convention to prevent the crime of genocide and to punish it. The other very important consideration that we took into account was that Israel itself is a signatory to the Genocide Convention, and by its signature, it has consented to the jurisdiction of the ICJ over the disputes related to to the crime of genocide. And we as South Africa, by virtue of the fact that we also have an obligation under the Genocide Convention to prevent that crime, we do not need to be a party to the current conflict that's going in there. So we have what lawyers call locus standi in the ICJ, and therefore that gives us, you know, that opportunity or that privilege to present this case on behalf of the Palestinians in the ICJ.
And by the way, you know, we remember that after the Rwanda genocide, the world said never again, and it's happening again, unfortunately. So, in its ruling, the ICJ issued interim orders that the Israeli regime must take measures to prevent genocide. But I think the regime is intent on continuing its genocidal war backed by the U.S. And, you know, we have seen what is happening in Rafah. So what's your take on this? I mean, it's total impunity on the part of the Israeli regime.
That has been our experience with the apartheid government in Israel for a very long time.
Yeah.
They have acted completely with impunity, and they have enjoyed political, diplomatic support and cover from their some of their partners in the West.
Yeah.
And that has been quite unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these provisional measures that the court has ordered, and we must be very clear, those provisional measures are binding on Israel, and they are binding on all of us as far as our obligations to prevent genocide are concerned. So the fact that the court has ordered these measures, there is also a corresponding obligation on all of us to ensure that Israel complies with these orders. For instance, it was really disappointing to see, particularly after the provisional measures were ordered, to see Israel's partners continuing to support Israel through provision of arms. And taking actions like withdrawing funding from UNRWA, the consequence of which is that it will perpetuate the genocidal decision on the part of Israel to starve the people of Gaza of food, medicines, and other essentials. So Israel is under an obligation to comply with these measures. And the rest of us must ensure that Israel complies with this, and that we do not take actions that will continue to perpetuate the genocide that is unfolding in Gaza.
Members of the U.S. Congress have called for, you know, like a review of South Africa-U.S. ties because of your country's stance at the ICC. And, you know, South Africa is resisting and has that resolve to move on. So what do you view all these threats? Have you received other, you know, like threats to downgrade ties or, you know, to pressurize you to withdraw from your support for Palestine?
Yes, we have seen, and you are referring to the United States, we have seen pieces of legislation that have been proposed in this context, as you say, to review our bilateral relations with the U.S.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know exactly what that means, but the U.S.'s own internal legislative processes, those are processes over which we have no control whatsoever. But what I will say, Mubarak, is this, that our decision to take this route is informed by the principles, the norms, the values, the standards that underpin our engagement with the world. At a multilateral level, at a bilateral level. And we, in our foreign policy, we are very clear. We are informed by principles such as respect for human life, multilateralism, the desire to have international relations governed by pre-agreed rules, as opposed to international relations being governed by a brute military and economic and political power.
Yeah.
We believe in a system of international relations that respects the rule of international law,
mm-hmm.
that seeks to resolve pressing political conflicts through peaceful means.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to, in order to ensure that we can live by these principles, we want to ensure that those institutions of global governance, like the United Nations, and those instruments of international legal systems, like the human rights legal systems, international humanitarian law, and all this, that we can use this and rely on this to address mm-hmm. the problems that we face in the world. And our approach through the ICJ is simply our desire to work within an agreed framework or so.
Mm-hmm.
So if other countries think that we shouldn't be doing that, or that if we pursue that that route, we need to be punished, well, it is something that over which we have no control. But what we know that we are fortified in our approach.
Yeah.
It's a principled approach that
Very
we are
good.
Taking.
Impressive.
And this is the correct way of approaching it.
Now, and this brings in the issue of double standards, you know, within the international system. You know, like during this conflict, Ukraine-Russia conflict, we've seen the ICC has issued, you know, arrest warrants or summons against Russian President Vladimir Putin. But within 3 or 4 months, the Israeli regime has killed 30,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children. And no warrant of arrest has been issued against the Israeli regime's Prime Minister Netanyahu. What's your take on these double standards?
Mubarak, my brother, you use the term double standards, and you are absolutely right to characterize how some of these international rules have been applied. And that is unfortunate because we cannot have a system of international law that applies or uses different rules and criteria for some and a different set of rules for the other.
Yeah.
That will simply breed contempt for the rules of international law. That
Indeed.
Will only bring this global system of rules into disrepute.
Yeah.
And it doesn't augur well for the global community going forward.
Yeah.
So it is regrettable that some of these institutions of global governance, and you have referred to the ICC, that in the case of President Putin, and now in the case of Prime Minister Netanyahu and some of the leaders of the apartheid regime in Israel, different set of rules are being applied.
Exactly.
And that is unacceptable. We must have a system of international law that applies to all, because international law must be applied without fear, favor, or prejudice, equally so. And that way you can inspire confidence in these rules.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if we continue to operate on the basis of these double standards, we will not do any good to the international system as a whole.
Yeah. Now, Israeli regime officials have accused South Africa of working closely with the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, and even say that South Africa is the legal arm of Hamas. What's your take on these claims?
We heard that, and that was one of the first accusations that Israel made when we took the case up to the ICJ.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that is in the strategy of the Israeli government.
Mm-hmm.
Those that it doesn't agree with, it will always label them. In our case now, we have been labeled as the legal arm of Hamas.
Yeah.
We have been labeled anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, and all this. And this is a strategy that they use to delegitimize, to pour scorn over the principled course of action that that we have mm-hmm. we have taken. And these insults, really, and these labels are usually the refuge of someone yeah. who does not have a case.
Yeah.
And therefore, these don't mean anything to us indeed. And I imagine that we are being labeled the yeah. legal arm of Hamas because in the eyes of Israel, Hamas is a terrorist yeah. organization, so it is regarded. But we do not regard Hamas as, yeah. as a terrorist organization, indeed. And we find those labels and comments mm-hmm. to be utterly preposterous.
Mr. Ambassador, South Africa has also been at the forefront of rejecting attempts by the Israeli apartheid regime to infiltrate the African Union. And the last attempt, two Israeli regime's officials were actually ejected from an AU summit in Addis Ababa. Can we now consider, following this genocide in Gaza, can we now consider that that case is closed and the regime will no longer be considered even for being an observer member of the African Union?
The issue of Israel as an observer in the AU
yeah.
Is an issue that our leaders still yeah. needed to discuss at the summit level.
Yeah.
However, from South Africa's point mm-hmm. of view, we are very clear.
Yeah.
We will oppose any decision, any application that yeah. seeks to admit Israel as an observer in the AU.
Yeah.
And the events since October last year,
yeah.
the genocide that Israel has carried out against the people of Palestine
yeah.
is in fact another solid reason yeah. why Israel's attempts to be an observer in the AU ought to be rejected.
Rejected, yeah. Now, we have seen many countries have expressed support, you know, to South Africa's case against the Israeli regime at the ICJ. Now, how will this impact on South Africa in terms of global geopolitics?
Well, yes, we have many countries have expressed the support for South Africa going forward, mm-hmm. which we appreciate, mm-hmm. Of course, and which I think the people of Palestine appreciate. As to how this will impact on geopolitics, I guess the jury is still out there.
It's unfolding.
Exactly. But for us, yeah. We have this case to prosecute, mm-hmm. We think we have made a very strong case going forward.
Yeah.
We have now passed the provisional measures,
yeah.
and we are glad that at the end of the submissions that we made on the 11th of January, mm-hmm. When other countries had labeled our cause of action as meritless,
yeah.
as baseless, as yeah. without any basis whatsoever, the ICJ agreed with us mm-hmm. by yeah. and large.
Yeah.
And we ought now to be moving into the merits stage. And for us, that is what we are focusing on. What are the implications and the broader yeah. geopolitics of that mm-hmm. would be, we'll mm-hmm. leave that to others to deal with.
And now, and even the fact that many state and non-state actors are supporting South Africa's bid, do you think there will be changes in the international system of justice, that there'll be more focus, people will have some hope on this international court of justice and even the ICC? Are we going to see an evolution towards more trust to these institutions?
From where I'm sitting, Mubarak, my brother, yeah. I think that this case has awakened mm-hmm. the conscience of ordinary people mm-hmm. On Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And these protests that we have seen across the world,
yeah.
from Cape Town to London, from Washington, D.C. to
Sydney.
Ramallah,
mm-hmm.
to all over,
yeah.
the ordinary people on the ground, through their various formations of civil society, mm-hmm. have taken this issue mm-hmm. upon their shoulders, mm-hmm. and they are putting pressure on their governments
yeah.
to do something about the genocide in Gaza. The ceasefire now, the calls for the ceasefire, the calls for mm-hmm. Humanitarian aid, and the calls for holding the apartheid government
yeah.
in Israel
accountable.
Yeah. All this is important, and it's a positive development, because ordinary people on Main Street now realize that these commitments to international law, international principles ought to be implemented.
Yeah.
And I think if anything that will come out of this, it is that positive reawakening of the people on the ground.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, BRICS recently expanded to include more countries, including Iran. And it's emerging as a major force globally. What do you think? What role can BRICS play in resolving global conflicts like the current genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza?
Well, BRICS is a grouping of mostly developing countries from the south.
Yeah,
and we have common objectives of pulling together our resources to develop our countries, our economies, to develop our people, and to foster greater cooperation and collaboration amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. And therefore, our cooperation mm-hmm. is in many fields mm-hmm. of economy, of politics, of culture, science and technology, and so on and so forth. And we also seek to adopt common approaches at resolving or addressing questions such as the conflict in Gaza. So BRICS becomes one of the important formations of the countries of the South to deal with all these challenges that we face today.
Mr. Ambassador, South Africa has been at the forefront, of resolving the Palestinian issue. And there have been so many proposals, there have been talks and negotiations that have failed because the Israeli apartheid regime has failed, to implement its commitments. And there is now this proposal, for example. Iran is proposing that one of the main ways of resolving the Palestinian conflict is through having a referendum that will involve all original inhabitants of Palestine, be they Jews, Christians, or Muslims, and even a referendum that will involve all Palestinian refugees who are scattered across the globe. Do you think this is a good solution? What's your take on this proposal to use a referendum to resolve the Palestinian issue?
Yes, so many proposals have been made about how to resolve the question of Palestine.
Yeah.
And we respect the sovereign position that the Islamic Republic of Iran has taken.
Yeah.
And we cannot contend, we cannot argue with that. It's a sovereign position of the Islamic Republic. But the important thing is that that proposal is also aimed at finding a durable, lasting peace for the people of Palestine. And we acknowledge and we appreciate and we endorse the principled support that Iran has provided to the people of Palestine. And it is part and parcel of that global effort to find accommodation and a solution to this.
Mr. Ambassador, our last question. The South African Parliament took a very decisive decision for recalling or the cutting of ties with the Israeli regime and the ejection of the Israeli ambassador from South Africa. And we've seen South Africans have also come out massively, to express support to Palestinians. Can you tell us more about this, the reason why South Africans are also, the people of South Africa, have come out, to express their support to Palestinians?
Yeah, first of all, yes, as South Africa, we support fully the struggle of the people of Palestine and the people of South Africa on Main Street supported that. However, I will say that, yes, it is true. We have recalled our ambassador from Tel Aviv since, I think, 2018.
Yeah.
We have recalled all our diplomatic staff in Tel Aviv, and we have also closed our embassy there. And it's not that we have cut diplomatic ties as such, but we have just closed our embassy in Tel Aviv, and it was a very clear decision on our parliament, which was also followed by the executive decision, that one of the reasons why we decided to close that was to ensure that we could force in one way or another the issue of the ceasefire. But if I may just say pretty briefly that, you know, South Africa, we are the beneficiary of one of the most coordinated, solid international solidarity movements since the Second World War, the anti-apartheid movement. And we think today there is a need to revive that spirit of that solidarity. Global anti-apartheid movement in solidarity with the people of Palestine. And we need to be looking at what measures we can take to put pressure on Israel. And if it means severing diplomatic ties, imposing an arms embargo, boycotts, isolation of the apartheid regime there, these are all peaceful measures that we can take. They have worked in the case of South Africa, and they can work in the case of Israel.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Francis Moloi, for your time today.
Thank you, Mubarak. It was a pleasure indeed to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. The Last Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah. To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Last Savior. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Islamic researcher, Brother Alavian. Assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome.
Walaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, Brother Alavian, we want to continue our discussion regarding the missions of the Sahabi, or a special Sahabi, Ashab al-Khas, of Imam al-As, Imam al-Mahdi, Ajalallah, may Allah hasten his reappearance. In our two previous programs, you talked about two types of missions, struggling against oppression or zulm, and struggling against deviations. Now, what is the third mission given by Imam al-As to his special deputies to act against when he reappears?
Based on what we learn from the language of narrations and rawayat and hadith, that third mission that we can define and we can actually categorize is development and prosperity of countries and establishment of justice. It requires some explanations to tell you what it exactly means. We said the mission of all the messengers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from day one of creation, from Adam alayhi salam till today, was iqama. Iqama means establishment.
Yes.
By iqama, in the language of narration, we refer to the iqama of justice, adl. All the prophets, all the messengers of Allah, all these 124,000 messengers of Allah came just to value, to appreciate this concept of iqama, that is justice.
Yes.
Those who had the time to actually to implement a part of it, they did.
The concept of establishment is important.
Establish.
That's right. Okay.
So the Holy Prophet tried to do the iqama of salat. Iqama of salat means establishment. It has been established in Islam world, in Islamic Ummah. It is already there.
Okay.
But iqama of justice was the main mission of all the prophets and all the messengers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This iqama requires elite of society, elite of the communities, Islamic or non-Islamic communities, to come and help and help. And to establish, to construct a society which deserves to be that utopia that all human beings in the course of history were wishing for.
Okay.
That utopia is there. This is the Mahdi utopia that we are waiting for. So ordinary people, I mean, cannot do this. I mean, those people like these special people and companions of Imam are the ones who deserve to do such a thing. And through this iqama, when you establish justice, then all the people feel a sort of confidence, serenity, and also trust yes. and the government and governing system.
Let's define Adala for us. What do we mean exactly? Does it mean that all the people, for example, enjoy the same part from the Baitul Mal, public treasure or something like that?
Look, brother, Adala or justice is something in front of oppression. So Adala or justice is some is not going to be like, for example, our right in Baitul Mal or the treasury of the government. No. Okay. Adala is something that all the human beings are thirsty of. I mean, they are all thirsty of finding their own rights in every aspect. If you are, for example, driving in a row, if you are, for example, working in your own office, when you see this injustice, it irritates you.
Yes.
You can check that the roots of all the revolutions in the history was this lack of justice.
Yes.
Oppression.
Yes.
People got tired of oppression and they just voiced up.
Yes.
You see, so in we cannot define one single aspect. When your right is being violated in every aspect, so you feel that, okay, your right is being kept observed and booked there. When you feel that this government, in the government that we are talking about, no one's right is going to be violated. And if your right has been violated, you can find a way and you are sure that your right will be given back to you. Mm-hmm. So then you'll become happy.
Yes.
It's the time that you support this government, you support this system.
Yes.
You see, so this idol that we are talking about is in every aspect. The idol of, for example, for ladies and for women. We see that lots of oppression goes to the women in the world.
Yes.
Not from today, it was even from the past.
Yes.
You see, but when they feel that, okay, their rights is there. I mean, yes. they are respected, they are valued, and they see, this is only one example. I can mention many, many other examples, yes, in different periods.
Now there's just,
in different
just
aspects.
Look at the world, what's happening in the world, you know, the minorities, colored people, different religious minorities, ladies, you know, in different movements, they are looking for their rights.
Exactly.
Okay.
Between different races.
Okay.
Some races feel their rights have been violated. Mm-hmm. Again, this is the time that these leaders, actually special companions of Imam, are the ones,
yes,
who Imam ordered them, yes, to behave people and to treat people with benevolence and justice.
Very good. Okay. Thank you much, Brother Alavian. Let's take our first break and then we'll continue our discussion.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. This thousand-year-old
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. You're listening to the program, The Last Savior. I am Atta, the host of this program. All right, Brother Alavian, this third important mission given by Imam al-Mahdi to his companions, special companions or Sahabi, is observing justice or establishing justice in different societies, a concept that all the people are looking for. Maybe the best example of the justice was Imam Ali alayhi salam at his time, up to an extent that George Jordan wrote a book, Al-Imam Al-Ali, Sotul Adalatul Insaniya, Imam Ali alayhi salam, The Voice of Human Justice. Is this justice going to be the same as Imam Ali alayhi salam?
Yes, let me tell you something. Okay. Parallel to this adala that Imam is looking for, and the companions of Imam are trying to reach to that point,
yes,
even parallel to that, they are working again on the development and prosperity of countries and cities as well.
Uh-huh.
So they are going side by side.
Yes.
But back to your question, yes, this adala that Imam wanted to actually implement it, but Imam was martyred due to his adala and justice, due to severity of his justice.
Yes.
Right. So it means that it was left incomplete, and I mean to the area, to the level that he was working on it was successful. So was it spread to the other areas of the Islamic Ummah?
Yes.
So it's something that we need to discuss it in another session. So it means that this adala that Imam Ali alayhi salam was starting and was looking for will be implemented fully and comprehensively.
implemented at the time of Imam.
At the time of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. I want to say that it was not completed at the time
so
of
the
Imam.
So the background is already over there.
This, I mean, the same concept, the same worldview that Imam Ali alayhi salam had, it would be implemented.
And the other
here.
Infallible Imams.
Definitely.
Like Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, he was after Adala. He said, I am after l'islah ummat Rasulullah, correcting and reforming the Ummah of Rasulullah. Okay, so now Imam al-Mahdi Jalala is going to do...
When we said that Imam dispatches all his companions to different parts of the world and asks them to treat people with justice and benevolence, these are the two main recommendations that Imam alayhi salam makes to them. I mean, and they know that they have to be like this because it is the goal of their mission. And Imam tells these rulers, when he sends them to different parts of the country, he says, in case you face any problem in solving an issue or in solving a problem, you just need to watch your palm of the hand.
Yes.
And it says that إِذَا قَامَ الْقَائِمُ بَعَثَ فِي الْأَقَالِيمِ الْأَرْضِ فِي كُلِّ أَقْلِيمِ رَجُلًا ثُمَّ يَقُولُ لَهُ عَهْدُكَ فِي كَفَّكَ. Your treaties is in your hand.
Okay.
In palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. فَإِذَا وَرَدَ عَلَيْكَ مَا لَا تَفْهَمُهُ وَلَا تَعْرِفُ الْقَضَاءَ فِيهِ فَانْظُرْ إِلَى كَفَّكَ. Look at the palm of your hand, you will find the answer for that. So it means there is a sort of communication between Imam and these special leaders. They will, in no time they will receive the answers in case they face any issue and any problem.
That's right.
So is it due to the development or progress in technology or IT or something else or, I don't know, spiritual communication? We have no idea exactly about this.
Sorry, it would be very much difficult nowadays. Just look at what is happening in Palestine. You know, everybody all around the world through different means are asking for the justice what's taking place in Palestine.
Very true.
Or for example, the Israel, you know, the Zionist attacks on Palestine. Even the non-believers in Islam nowadays, there was a recent case, you know, of a pilot, the American pilot, who we can say burned himself.
Yeah.
And in his last will and testament, all his assets were given to the children of Palestine. Through different means, the people are looking for justice.
Very true.
But they don't know what to do because, as you said, the sources are corrupt in the world.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
We said that this is the missed ideal of human being that human being is in search of.
Yes.
So, but let me give you a glad tiding again that this usurper regime will end before the arrival of Imam. And inshallah, hopefully, at the time of Imam, Imam will stand for prayer in Masjid al-Aqsa.
Okay.
And the Prophet Isa, Jesus the Christ, will be saying prayers behind him. So it means that this regime will not take long and hopefully it will be removed from the scene of the earth. And this justice that at least these people who are being genocide and massacred in Palestine are the ones who are more thirsty of this justice at this time. It's very strange and very, I don't know, difficult to understand that why a person from US who was a pilot, who was not even a Muslim, feels this necessity to say something, to show himself that he disagrees with this oppression that goes in this part of the world, but many Islamic countries are silent and do nothing. So this is the bid'ah, the innovation that I have been talking about, that Imam stands in front of this bid'ah. A person from other religions feels this necessity to show, to say something, to represent himself and say that, okay, I disagree with this oppression, this genocide that is happening there, but other Muslims are silent and do nothing.
That's right. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Alavian. Let's take our second break and then we'll continue our discussion.
مهدينا في الأزمان شعظيه ربنا في العالمين أضفع له نور أليق والظالم ابتده من أجل السالكين أهدى سنه مهدينا في الأزمان شعظيه ربنا في العالمين أضفع له نور